This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away.
What's up, guys? Thanks for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. Today is Tuesday, June 10th. When this episode airs, it will be Thursday, June 12th. And this coming Sunday is Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all of you fathers out there. For those of you who have been following along with this podcast, you already know this. For those of you who are new to us, welcome. This year is going to be my very first Father's Day. And as I'm recording this, and as you know, we're approaching that milestone, I'm left to reflect on the first 8 weeks of being a father. And it has been amazing to start. Let's start with that. Overall, it has been absolutely incredible. I feel like this is what I've been put here for. The good Lord has made me to be a dad. I genuinely believe that. I'm typically the neurotic one. And what I mean by that is I'm go, 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 go. And I seem to have found a level of calmness in being a dad that honestly, I wasn't expecting to have. And it's a really, really pleasant surprise. It's welcoming. The hard part, what I found, is not in raising a child. I mean, they eat, they sleep, they go to the bathroom, they need a bath. I know that's simplifying it way, way more than what it really is. But at the end of the day, that's what we're doing all day long. We're putting the baby down. She wakes up, giving her, you know, a bottle, changing her diaper, hanging out with her for a while, getting some smiles out of her, and then, you know, putting her back to sleep. What has been the tough part of being a first-time dad has been remembering that we are still a team. I still have a partner and we're still in a relationship. We are still married to one another, and finding that time to still be a couple, even though we have this beautiful addition to our family, that has been the hard part of taking care of the day-to-day, you know, the house and keeping up with the home and all that good stuff. Is that has been the hard part of parenthood, and the part that, you know, my wife and I, Danielle and I, are still working through. It seems that over the last couple of weeks, especially now that I'm out of school for the summer, it seems like we've finally started to hit our stride, and we're figuring it out, and I'm grateful for that. You know, Danielle, if you're listening, you know, thank you for all that you've done. You've been an absolute rock star through all this, you know, so I love you and thanks for everything you do, and you're amazing. So just keep it up. I've also had some people reach out to me along the way and offer advice and some support. I've thanked them in the past, but I'm going to thank them again. Brian Melvin of Timberlife Outdoors and Mitchell Shirk of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. Both of you guys have been very, very supporting in all of this, and I want to thank you for that. You know, you guys haven't had to do that, so thank you. Lastly, before I introduce today's episode, now after I say this, you guys might turn it off, you know, turn off the podcast for the day, but it is what it is. I was raised in the Christian faith growing up. And to be honest with you guys, at about 17 years old, I had a life-altering event that had happened to myself and my family. And through that event, I had prayed a lot. And I felt like at the time, young kid, I didn't get that support that I was looking for from him, if you will. So I've spent the last, I don't know, almost 20 years now, 17 years. I've spent the last 17 years of my life being very angry with God, with the Creator. And over the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, I've been starting to slowly find my way back to Him. And we all know that He works in mysterious ways. And as of late, I feel like He has been sending me signs, whether that's through people reaching out to me and offering support in one way or another, or, you know, hearing a podcast where there's a message that just speaks to me. A lot of that has been happening to me lately. And one thing in particular, well, two things. I just recently had a conversation with another podcaster, and, you know, we had a conversation about faith, and he prayed for me out of nowhere. You know, it was kind of random, but I appreciated it, and it meant a lot more to me than I even think he really understands. So if you're listening to this, you know who you are, and I want to thank you for that. But I was also listening to yesterday, actually, the Chasing Giants with Dom Higgins, his podcast. And recently they've been doing like a Sunday worship at the end of their podcast. And in this very short sermon that they released this week, one of the things that the message was essentially that it's great to pray and it's great to seek guidance and support from the Creator. But at the end of the day, He is not going to make a miracle happen for you. You have to put one foot in front of the other and make a decision and a choice to move forward and do something. And in that is where the guidance from Him, from the Creator, comes from. That's where the guidance starts. So I found that over the last few years, I've been doing a lot of praying and a lot of talking and a lot of asking, but I haven't done a lot of doing. So this rant is all, I guess you could say, my way of doing. I have this platform here that I've been blessed with and I'm thankful for. And I have found a lot of solace in this podcast and the conversations that I have with people. And I've made a lot of good friends. And I think at this point, this is my opportunity to use this for something more than just myself or, you know, my hobbies, I guess you could say. So this is my way of taking a step forward and making that first move. And I'm going to do better in trying to be a better Christian, I guess you could say. So if you guys are still listening, thank you very much for that. If you guys know me, it's not very easy for me to sit here and talk about personal things like that. I usually keep that kind of stuff close to the chest or just talk to people that are close to me when I need that kind of support. So take it for what you will. I'm not looking for a pat on the back or an attaboy. Just my way of sharing my struggle and a story of mine and something that I've held close to my chest for a long time. And I think I'm finally ready to step beyond that. So again, thank you for listening this far. Thank you all for your support, as large or as small as it may come. With all that being said, today's episode is a continuation on our Science of Aeroflight series. We are welcoming Dorge back for another episode here, and we are going to continue talking about broadheads, which is where the last episode of the science series left off. In that podcast, we talked about the different types of broadheads and how they affect flight and what kind of characteristics of a broadhead you want to look for, but we kind of only scratched the surface. This episode, we begin by talking about FireNox specific broadheads. They offer some very interesting characteristics or abilities, I guess you could say. I'm not really sure what word I'm looking for here, but We start off by talking about fire knock broadheads, how they function, how they're different. But then we go into, again, general characteristics of broadheads. So how are they built? What materials are they built with? What benefits, what pros and cons are there to each type of material? What pro is there to a high FOC? What pro is there to low FOC? How does that affect your broadhead behavior? How does the type of broadhead affect behavior on impact? So on and so forth. I think this is a really relevant topic at this time of the year. I think this time of the year, the summertime, is when people are starting to tinker with their things, maybe trying out some new broadheads, trying out some new equipment. So we're here to help you make those choices and hopefully help you narrow down what you may be willing to try out. If this intro wasn't already long-winded as it is, I do have a couple updates. I mentioned last week that I'm going to be beginning to review bows at short draw lengths, 26, 27, 28 inches. That is in partnership with Silver Birch Archery over in Milford, Pennsylvania. If you guys are in the area where, you know, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania all meet, or if you know where Milford is, head on over to Silver Birch Archery Shop. And Russell over there, he's got everything you need. Great shop, great atmosphere. I really enjoy it. Also, if that's a little bit too far of a drive for you, remember there is Big Geese Custom Pro Shop up in Lake Hopatcong, New Jersey. Anyway, I say all that to remind you that this coming Monday is when I'm filming the very first bow review. So some of the things that I'm doing in that review are just introducing the bow, you know, the typical axle to axle IBO, all of that, you know, all of that advertised information, if you will. Then we're going to go into measuring a whole bunch of different specs, anything from the reflex to the axle to axle at full draw and all that good stuff. I'm definitely 100% going to be including the draw curve, most likely at 27 inches, because it'll be between that 26 and 28. You'll get a good idea of it. But I absolutely love when reviews show the draw curve. And I like to use it to compare, especially when I'm going to buy a new bow. If I know the draw curve of my current bow, I could use that to make a better decision when I go to buy a new bow. But anyway, I say all this to say, hey, if there's a bow that you want me to test out in the future or right off the bat, please, please, please leave a comment down below. Send me an email. Let me know so I can make sure that these reviews are relevant to you. Also, if there's anything that you'd like to see in the review, for example, maybe certain angles, maybe there's a part of the riser that you want to see, certain tech that you're looking for, any information that you like to see but don't typically see in bow reviews, let me know and I'll be sure to include that. Last but not least, remember, we are now making custom arrows, Truth Sticks custom arrows. I recently actually linked up with an arrow shaft distributor, and I now have access to a lot more shafts than just the fire knock shafts. Now, I will be honest with you, we truly believe that fire knock shafts are the best ones out there. But if there's something that you like, something that you prefer, no problem whatsoever. I'll be more than happy to build your arrow on that shaft. I'm able to build Arrow Concept 1.0 on any shaft, and whether or not you use fire knock shafts, the Arrow Concept 1.0 will be the best performing arrow you will ever shoot. I hang my hat on that. So if you're interested in trying them out, please make sure you reach out to me. That's wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. Or if you want to reach out to me via DM on Instagram, you could reach me at wingandtail.outdoors. Last but not least, remember, as far as Truth Sticks are concerned, we are still running that special. If you follow us on Instagram, I will take off $5 on your order of a dozen arrows. If you follow us on YouTube, I will take off another $5. And if you leave a 5-star written review down below, I will take off the cost of shipping. So I will ship the product, the dozen arrows to you for free. So that's all I got, guys. I mean, this is, again, I apologize. This is the longest intro that I've done to date, but I had some things I needed to get off my chest. I felt like it was very important. So be it. Anyway, if you're still listening this far along, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, where success is always just a commitment away. You've heard enough of me talking. Without further ado, here is George Huang. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen.
Wing and Tail Boys podcast is brought to you by Truth Sticks Custom Arrows. Built with fire knock technology, Truth Sticks custom arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truth Sticks custom arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of Aeroflight.
Hey, George, welcome back. How you doing today?
I'm doing quite okay. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I mean, the weather's starting to get a little bit better out here. We've had some last 2 weeks. We've been like toying with 50s. 2 days ago was the 70s over here.
Yep, so, I'm 66 right now.
That's awesome. I feel like spring is toying with us though, because like we get 2 or 3 days where it's warm, and then the temperature dips again.
But that is supposed to happen.
That's early spring for you, right? So last week we touched on, we started talking about the broadheads. Well, yeah. So 2 weeks ago we finished up with the veins and started talking a little bit about the broadheads. And last week we really dove into the different types of broadheads. So, you know, for example, two blade, single bevel, four blade, three blade, fixed broadheads, mechanical broadheads. And we kind of closed up that episode touching a little bit on the three different broadheads that you offer through FireKnock. And to start today, I know that you wanted to talk about what is different about your two-blade broadheads compared to others. And to refresh everybody, you have two different two blades that you offer. You offer the two-blade dagger and the two-blade Tomahawk.
Correct. And the dagger, that is actually eight offerings.
Eight different offerings.
Right. With the dagger, the first dagger is a dagger for Stalker, which is 100 grain. It is actually got a hole in the back to go in the Stalker insert. And then we got the dagger in the titanium version, to which is GL5, that's 85 grain. Mm-hmm. Then we got a dagger in high pressure die cast, which is in stainless steel, about 100 and about 125. Just say so you know, I did say the word about, okay? Because high pressure die cast, you can't get the exact of, I'll give you a rough edge. On high pressure die cast of 125 as designed, you end up with more like 119 to 132. Okay. So you'll be lucky to get 20% of them exactly at 125.
So two questions for you on that. First off, if there's a little bit of a range in there, I would assume that before you ship them out to a customer, you match weight or you weight match them, right?
Right. Make sure on your package on the bottom, I tell them this whole package is all 129, 130, 132.
Right.
So that's the reason if you go to my website and order, if you don't say anything, I'll give you the closest to 125 I give you. Mm-hmm. If you say, I already got a few of the 130, I'll give you if I have 130, I'll give you 130. So that's the reason I don't sell any more high pressure die cast, but I will tell you, and high pressure die cast is better. Do you know why?
I don't, but I think you're going to tell me.
Yes. High pressure die cast, you allow the metal to flow directionally into the mold, which means that all your metal is pointing the same direction, which means that when you sharpen it, you're sharpening the metal on the same angle and direction of the molecule of the metal.
Like that. Okay.
It is why it is so much better. But the downside is that if people only want 125 and love it, I mean, if I make it again, if they only want 125 and let me with the rest, technically, if you got a 20% yield, if you want the rest of that, you have to make it 500% more expensive because you need to throw away the rest of the 80%.
Right. Now, I'm going to ask the question that I'm sure the listeners are thinking right now. If field points generally come in, you know, 85, 100, 125, 150, and they get a broadhead that's say 119, how do they match their field point accuracy to their broadhead accuracy?
Well, this is actually, if you notice, 99% of all arrows do, and you get a so-called a match one, it's not going to be the same. So you use your best matching. Because, ideally, they are all 100% identical, but in reality, it never was. So a few grains on and off is going to be the norm. Mm-hmm. And you can try your best to match it. Because every part of an arrow, as you make it, that's going to vary. That's the reason when you build an arrow, like we talk about, you do match your shaft heavy to low on the beginning with, your insert low to heavy to begin with, and then you do your veins and so on. And then finally, your broadhead. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do any of those and just build it, you're going to see that the heaviest, the lightest is going to be 3-4 grain difference. Well, guess what? If you buy those, you're going to use that to your benefit.
I got you.
Now, of course, we do make titanium spacer and brass spacers. Mm-hmm. Those brass spacers are 1, 2, 3, 4 grains to add to your arrow shaft for the front. So, and remember, when you measure the weight of the arrow, you also weight on the arrow weight distribution. Because
as in the FOC, the distribution
not the weight, not FOC. Yes, simply weight distribution. Yes, you can use FOC, but you need to sort of make the arrow and you mark the arrow. Say the arrow is 29 inch. You got to weight the arrow on the center line of say 12 inch because it's usually front a little bit more because you don't have it. If you don't have broadhead, you should be right in the center. So you weigh all of them. But then now you seem to try to balance every single arrow. Then you put a water and balance it. They're not going to be the same. Just because you're able to weigh them the same, do not weigh mean they're balanced the same. Now, just give you an idea how bad things get. I got a customer telling me after he do the arrow, he will put a drop of super glue in the behind the neck to match them with match every single arrow within, say, 0.1 grain. Yes, it matched 0.1 grain on the scale. But now this question, how would the arrow fly?
Maybe
you're
not
adding
the same.
Weight not off the center of the bow on the back of the arrow. Yeah. That's what it means.
So that then kind of serves, and I don't want to get too far ahead of this because it's something that we're going to touch on, you know, probably in the near future now because we're getting close to this. But when we build our arrows based on the scientific process, never mind arrow concept, just the general scientific process, that's why we weigh every single component and try to match everything before we build it. So that way the arrow can be as closely balanced as possible.
Right. Remember one thing. You say, you got to say a dozen arrow. They all, the shaft is 225 ideal. You buy from Firenut, if you come to you, you see that on the label, it say 225. That means every single shaft is plus or minus 225. Now, plus or minus one means that it can be 226, can be 224. That's plus or minus one, right? So now, that's 2 grain difference. Now, the question is that, where is that 2 grain difference? Over the entire shaft or in the section in the front, in the back? You have no idea. And then when you cut, you say, this is where the problem is with the Firenut being arrow. Like especially the sport weave and arrow weave, they are multi-layer weave shaft. You weigh the arrow in the middle. Does it mean the arrow is exactly, say, 9.75 grain per inch?
Probably not.
No, it does not. See, I think the stuff get real deep real fast. So a lot of people go so hung up and say, oh my God, I'm going to match them within 0.1 grain. You don't really want to do that. You start adding a little bit. If you simply grind your arrow on the back, say you grind on an 80 grit sandpaper for, say, 5 seconds, mm-hmm. you're going to lose half grain. Mm-hmm. So if your arrow is 1/64 of an inch shorter, you think you're going to notice it? But now you got it matched. Mm-hmm. But then if you go ahead and add glue to the back of behind your neck to make it match, you actually screw it up, isn't it?
Yeah. You're probably better off just leaving it matched weight but not balanced and call it a day.
Yeah, but then of course the process, like when I do it, I would say I'll build my insert, my tubings. I'll weigh on my insert. I'm heavy to weight, heavier left from left to right, my tubings from heavy to weight, right to left, and then I put them together. Does it mean they all matched? No, it do not. It means that you minimize the variance.
The variance, yeah.
Yeah, then you go ahead and match. Now you weigh all your insert from heavy to right. Remember, when I from heavy to light, light to heavy for the insert and tubings, I'm now supposed to be averaging it. But that do not mean they all the same now. The right. Means that I'm now get them closer.
But not perfect.
Not perfect. Then I weight them again from the, now I do it from heavy to light, from left to right. And then I marry my shaft, I weight my shaft, and then do them weight, then light to heavy from right to left. Now I mash them together. I mean, you do that all you can. The fact is that in most cases, you're not able to do all of them perfectly.
And then that makes you wonder how much of a variance is there when you don't measure out the pieces, you know? So it's like, it gets a little crazy. So
I know. I mean, just like, remember we talked about it on our last episode about blazer? Yeah. On a pack of 1,000 white blazer, the average grain is 5. That whole pack, based on my last experience in 2009, is 40% weight difference in 1,000 pack of blazer.
That's too much. In my opinion, that's too much.
That's the reason I told me, because if you, and now you think about it, the guy who are cool and say, I got 2 white and 1 tiger barb, a tiger lines, and then I got an American flag with 3 colors. You think they weigh the same? Let me just tell you, because those are hot press stamped into the shaft. It mm-hmm. changed the surface texture of that vein. The aerodynamic characteristic and the flexibility characteristic is already changed.
Every vein acts different. It behaves differently. It responds differently.
But then you got a normal guy who shoot on 200 leafy per second, it don't matter. You can be 5 grains off, you won't know the difference. Mm-hmm. But then you got some customer who is like one of my more progressive customers shooting 505 feet per second, you're going to squeeze it. And they say, I just changed the vein from arrow vein to this, and they don't fly the same, even on few points. I say, yeah, you're shooting 505 feet per second. What do you think the aerodynamic characteristic of that vein is going to be? Oh, sorry. I mean, I just want to rehash some of the detail before we move into the product design. And just like until you got those addressed on crossbow, what do you think you're going to, when you're dealing with material? I mean, like I saw Dim touch it. You notice one of the major characteristics of all fine arc two blade, except the high pressure die cast 100, they are all exactly 4 millimeter thick.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't notice that. No.
Do you know why this is such an important?
I don't know.
Yes, because first of all, you got thickness. When you got thickness, and it's about 157 thousandths of an inch thick that we're talking about, not 15,000. That's what most blades are. This is 157 thousandths thick, not 15, 18,000 like most of the broadhead blades are.
That's a little bit more than 1.5 tenths. Ladies and gentlemen, you're getting there.
Yeah, it's serious. I mean, it's thicker than 1/8. It's supposed to do 3/16 of an inch. Mm-hmm. By doing so, you allow the chisel to really form.
You're saying at the tip, you're saying?
The entire chisel plane.
Gotcha. Before we go into that, I think it's important that we try to explain what it is that's different about the dagger as far as the design of it.
Well, the dagger is a complex single bevel to start with. Mm-hmm. 90% of people who make single bevel, they look like the Finnock Tomahawk. Mm-hmm. And with the tip in the front, they take the... See, when you form two edges coming together, you got a line. Then they just cut both sides to form a point. Nope, the Finnock dagger is actually cut the entire point from front to back using a separate angle. So it's a complex single bevel. The beauty of that is that the main bevel still take dominance. The second bevel only gives you the penetration ability. So the main bevel not just cut, it also on the very edge, it tears and while it rotates. So you do not compromise on the penetration. You do not compromise on the backside because it's a complex single bevel. You got a second single bevel on the other side, but at a similar angle, but much shallower. That means the groove of it, although it is the main blade is 4 millimeter, that only have less than 1.5 millimeters because the angle is different.
Now, I think I'm picking up on the difference, but can you explain to the listeners what the difference between a regular double bevel is and a compound single bevel? What is the difference between the two?
Okay, we need to understand when the arrow hits, unless the arrow was shooting out from a true crossbow with no rotation, the arrow have to rotate a little bit. And that rotation will maintain as it cuts. A double bevel, you are using the one side to form the cutting. The other side is simply not doing anything. So in other words, imagine, I mean, for simplistic, imagine you've got a 4 millimeter thickness. I'll use 1/8 because most people think it's 1/8. I say 1/8. So the bevel for each side is 1/16 on both ends. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So when you cut, you have the bevel of one side 1/16 rotating against the cutting process. So the edge of that blade to give you the rotation process is not enhanced. It's just a normal blade like you're cutting straight down onto a tomato using a normal kitchen knife. Now, the moment you got a single bevel, now that's changed. Depends on which way the knife bevels. You want a bevel on the, when you cut on it, you want a bevel on the other side, the away side of your cut. So now the whatever you cut, you push away and then go straight down. Mm-hmm. So you got a very smooth surface. But then you created two form of problems. The flat side that touches the material will go stick to whatever the material is.
So it wants the knife or the blade in this case wants to stick to the material it's cutting?
As it goes on. But as you rotate it, it will start to turn away from it. So now you're actually making the blade try to form a vacuum between the place you cut.
And what problem?
Now then, of course, if you use a potato knife, you notice they got groove on the inside. So when you cut it, the air that comes in, the potato won't stick to the knife. The double bevel or your potter blade have that major benefit.
Okay. So the double bevel has the benefit where once it cuts, it pushes the meat aside on both ends.
Correct.
A single bevel, even though it's turning away from the cut, but it wants to pull the meat with it as it's turning.
Now, this is where the difference. Assuming you're grinding a 4 millimeter, in other words, the angle of grind. Remember, you're using the same identical triangle on the center of the blade. Say you're using 17 degree. Now you've got 17 degree all the way to one point. So the 17 degree to 90 degrees is exactly 17 degree. Just no more, no less. But the moment you put it on both sides, it's 34 degree now. Angle, cut. You just minus your angle by half.
All right.
But then the fact is, in most cases, the moment you do that, your blade tip intensity, your retention of the blade sharpness is there. Single bevel do not retain the sharpness as good as a double bevel for that exact reason.
All right. Okay, so that
makes
sense.
And then you also got concave bevel. I mean, if I have my way, I would have do a single bevel with a concave in it because that would give you really good because now the blade is no longer stick to the material cut.
So essentially the type of design that the Kudu broadheads have. All right. And why you said if you had it your way, that's how you would build it.
No, I will build it with single bevel, and then I concave that bevel edge.
Right. So then why don't you do it that way?
Because it's almost impossible. The cost will be so high.
Really?
Because you need to find a CNC machine and physically make that concave.
Gotcha.
Because you can't sharpen it.
And then you can't sharpen it. Which kind of takes away
whatever that is. But see, the thing is that with that process, it's great if you've got enough thickness material, like the tomahawk, or like the tomahawk, or like the extra hammer, you don't need that. Like the dagger, you can really improve penetration, but you decrease the head retaining because you've got less material.
All right.
But then in most cases, when you do that, using hardening process, that means you change the behavior material after you sharpen it. That's where the magic begins.
Yeah.
We're almost at 100% green up in the mountains of New York, which means the majority of the country is in spring or summer food plot mode. If you're in the market for some seed this year, you have to make sure the Vitalize seed is on your list. Whether you're running a traditional system or a no-till system, they've got you covered with products like annual clover, clover plus with chicory, or their 1-2 punch of nitro boost in the summer and carbon load in the fall. They've also got natural amendments to help give your food plots and seeds the boost they need to thrive. More important than that, Vitalize Seeds' focus starts with the soil to help solidify your plots for years to come. So whether you're looking for some seed this warm season or simply looking for some answers to your questions, head on over to VitalizeSeed.com to find your solutions.
Which is something that we don't really have to worry about with your broadheads, right? The sharpening isn't really something that...
Yes, and first of all, on top of that, on the new daggers, they are mimed. Mm-hmm. They actually was hardened. They are called complete hardening. Complete hardening have one good part and one bad part. Complete hardening is that if you shoot, say, a dagger into, say, a boulder, you're going to break it on the neck because you've got a large blade bending. You'll snap right on where the O-ring is. If I don't put the O-ring, you'll be stronger, but then you don't have the center part of it. So, I mean, after you go through an NMO, if you hit a rock, who cares? But if you hit a bone, the bone is not going to be strong enough to break it. Like a lot of my customers complain to me and say, Dodge, I went to Namibia, I go and shoot at some of the bigger animals with my 450 feet per second score, but it went through the Gimsbuck, the whatever. And then it hit the ground and hit the rock and you break the broadhead. Now at the arrow, the tip is back in the arrow and that. I say, okay. And your point is?
But did you get the animal?
You kill the animal perfect. And then because you shoot the animal so good, I mean, you got, say, 225 KE. You went through the animal with, say, 60-pound KE. So you now still have 140-pound on the ground. So you broke the broadhead. But what's your problem?
Sounds like a successful shot.
Yeah, but then they say, well, I can't really pick the arrow out. We shot it. Just before a minute, let me ask you a question. You shoot the animal at 140 pound. After you shoot through animal 140 pound KE, it hit the ground so hard, it actually broke the broadhead on the neck. What do you think is going to happen to the blade? It's going to dent out of the bejesus, isn't it? Then if you're going to sharpen it, you're going to just change the weight, every distribution, the whole nine yards. I mean, yes, if you start shooting crossbows at that speed at an animal and you hit the rock, I'll say that's part of hunting.
But I mean,
if you really want something to do about it, I say, I can't help you.
Yeah. My thing is, like, it's really great to have all that extra KE, right? It's really nice to know, you know, if I make a good shot, a bad shot, I hit bone, I hit whatever, it's going through and I'm going to get the kill. Like, that's awesome. But then you also got to understand what that means for not hitting bone and just a perfect shot through just the meat and, you know, the meat and the tissue. That arrow is going to go through so fast, going to go like cutting through butter. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, it's great to have all that KE and all that power, and it's awesome and ethical kill and all that. But just know on the back end, you know, it's...
But at the same time, if with that crossbow, you happen to shoot a little bit further into the shoulder blade, not the shoulder joint.
Right.
It will split that shoulder blade, literally split it.
Oh, yeah. See ya.
And keep going. I mean, yes, the animal may not be dead, but you can have an animal that walk around with 3 feet.
Right.
You should be able to reload another one and get it killed.
I think I have them here. I had them somewhere. Our last episode we did, I actually had the a set of daggers out here. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to find where the heck I put them because I want to show the listeners something. But if I can't find it, we're just going to skip it.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a second. I had them out here. Is this it? Got them. Okay. So what's really, really cool about these daggers, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this on Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts, you might want to take a look at either the YouTube video that we have posted. You can watch it on Dorge's channel, or you could just go straight to the Fire Knock website. But what's really, really cool about these, first off, It looks just like a straight up dagger. I mean, they're really cool.
Yeah, that's
the really
one. That's the only one that's 2.5 millimeter thick. All the rest is full. Right. Because high pressure die cast. But you can put it and point it towards the customer. You'll see the major deal. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Now, if you look at it like that, I mean, you can see the geometry of it, right? But what's really, really cool, what I like about it, and what serves to using it with the arrow vanes, is it's all centered here. It has the ferrule that goes all the way through the middle here, but mm-hmm. all the weight is on the outside. So as this arrow is rotating, it's helping the arrow reach a gyroscopic spin.
Right. It is like a top with a wide. It takes longer to spin up, but it's going to take a lot more energy to slow it down.
To slow it down.
Now, this is also one of the main deals, is that when you shoot an arrow with a dagger, not like a single two baffle or a single baffle, it do not give you a slot. It give you a rectangle cut hole all the way around it.
Because it looks like a rectangle.
Yep, if you look at it, but not just that, because the action of that blade and how the blade rotates as it cuts, it actually cuts like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts like that. And remember, yeah, Kieran, going forward. So the blade is being cut, pushed to one side at the same time. So it's cut and pushed simultaneously using the rotation of the blade. Exactly. And not to mention, if you shoot high speed enough, the backside, if you put the back on the back, that was a curved surface on it. See that on the inside? That was a curved surface on one side and not. That curved surface actually...
On the inside of it, yes. You mean, like right here? Okay.
You know, yep. That curved surface is identical on an aspect ratio as an owl.
Oh, an owl also.
So when
also.
The air flies through it, there's no sound.
All right. I love that. And what's also really cool about these is you offer them in a titanium model, right?
Which is 85 grain.
It's 85 grain, which is really nice for those of you who want a balanced arrow. I, for one, am going to be shooting the 75 grain Raptor, I think, this year, the swing blade, I believe. But the nice thing about the titanium version of this is it's the exact same profile, the exact same size as the 100 grain.
No, so 125.
The 125 grain.
Yes,
even better.
It's so much thicker.
Even better.
Yes, it's 4 millimeter thick. You know why? Because think about it. Titanium is 45% weight of stainless. Mm-hmm. So 125 times 0.55 is about 85. Then I do a little bit of adjustment, I'm going to get an 85. Ta-da.
So for those of you who like the speed of a lighter arrow, but you don't like having the weight of a heavier broadhead, this, something made out of titanium, is the perfect middle ground. You get the same size cut as a larger broadhead without the added weight of that larger broadhead. So it's like the best of both worlds.
Well, a lot of people also like and dislike the fact is that the titanium do not retain an edge like a steel broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The GL5 titanium, just like if you ever use titanium knife and a steel knife, the biggest difference is that when you cut with a steel knife, the moment you cut your meat, your own hand, mm-hmm. you feel that sharp heat. And then you see blood.
Mm-hmm.
With titanium, that's about half. It's like, I mean, if you ever use ceramic knife, the worst part about it is you cut yourself, you do not know, you just see blood everywhere. Then you have to find where you cut yourself. The titanium is right there in between.
That's terrible.
So that means if you ever did shot an animal with titanium and you really do a good shot, you don't touch any bone, the arrow will go through the animal, it would like a bee sting to the animal,
mm-hmm.
it won't even know what happened, and then it just dies.
They won't really feel it or feel that jump.
Because not like the trauma hawk or not like a normal three blade, you don't feel the heat and the instant sense of death. It's like, damn, there's a fly, there's a big wasp.
Right. And I've heard plenty of different stories and studies where a lot of professionals and scientists say that, you know, when you shoot a deer, a good shot on a deer, lungs, heart, or whatever, they don't really feel the pain the way we think of pain, right? You know, so that's why it's so important to make that ethical shot and, you know, let the animal expire as quickly as possible.
Let me tell you a funny story. A long time ago, on my birthday, I shot a really big button buck. At 45 yards. And it went through the entire animal so fast, so straight, because mm-hmm. I'm using Arrow Concept 1.0. Mm-hmm. And I use a broadhead called the First Cut XT from mm-hmm. Eastman. It was beyond sharp. It looked very much like a dagger. The arrow went straight through the animal. It was funny. It go right through it. The animal don't even budge. Then I put my scope on and look at it because it's like 48 yards. Okay, I look at it. And the animal walk a few more steps. Then you go up the thing, start eating leaf. And then
it just falls right over.
Right. It literally just died while he was eating. I say, well, that's different.
That's awesome.
I know, because that was a really, because I shot right through his heart. That was the days I'm still using my vertical bow. I remember I shot it with the straw, the SR-71. Mm-hmm. It was a fastball.
Yeah.
I like fastballs.
It sounds like all your bows are fast. Now, it sounds almost illegal to talk about the dagger without talking about the Tomahawk, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the original broadhead. The Tomahawk, right? Tomahawk was your original, and then you designed this from it.
Yeah, because my discussion with Jim Camp, also I remember I talked to Francis out of PSC, and we talked. He said, you know, the PSC Duck 15 have close to a 180-pound KE and more, close to 200-pound KE. And Jim said, yeah, if we shoot the Scorpid 1.6 with 420 feet per second, with what you call it, the kinetic arrow, because in Michigan, they got a maximum speed. So they are shooting a 600 grain arrow, you know. Jim, with your 420 feet per second arrow bow, you drop the speed down to something like 375 with a 600 grain arrow. That's close. You need 175. I mean, you're talking about putting, I say, that's 175 grain broadheads. If I want to shoot a 400 normal, you say, yeah, we need about 175 grain broadhead with a steel insert. I say, then you're talking 600 grains. I say, then I do a rough calculation. Wait a minute, that's about 250 pound KE or slug force. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brad Fulton out of a Ramcat pretty much proved to me with the Ramcat SPG, you will go through an animal with, I say, 14 inch thick animal with less than 25 pound KE. And a lot of the customer of Jim telling, after seeing how fast it cut through an animal, they all bought Ramcat SPG. Now, just think about it. You got an arrow with 200 pound KE minimum. You're going to cut through the entire animal with 25 pounds. After the arrow went through the both lung, you still have 175 pound KE right there.
Right. That's what we're saying, tell me it's not left over.
It broke the broadhead after it hit the rock.
Now, I don't have a Tomahawk. I only have daggers. Do you have a Tomahawk that you can pull up? So what's really special about the Tomahawk and what I really like about it, and actually I'm pretty sure if I can swing it, I'm probably going to shoot the Tomahawk for turkey season this year. But what's really cool about the Tomahawk is...
I got the 3D model of the Tomahawk on my website. So you can just go click on it, and then you can rotate it in any shape or form. Mm-hmm. See, that's the one.
Yep. Which
is a line.
Yep. Which is, the predecessor of this one. So if you're listening, what we're doing right now is we're holding up the two different broadheads up to the camera at the moment. And you can see how the dagger is very, very similar to the Tomahawk. But you can also see how it's a little bit different.
So, yes, man, you see that? That's a round curve right here to control the sound.
Yep. Now, the dagger, you know, if you hold it on the side profile, is just the Tomahawk ground down. You know, the inside is hollowed out
of this, and you grind it all the way to the back.
Exactly. Now, the dagger is the Tomahawk that is hollowed out in the middle. But not only that, if you saw George holding up that Tomahawk, you see that instead of the broadhead coming to a point, it actually meets at one leading line. It's a leading edge instead of a leading point. And what that does is it allows the broadhead on impact to function the same way a splitting axe does, rather than, you know, a point of a regular broadhead. And it works very similar to a Tomahawk. You know, one of the oldest usable things for hunting and just.
Let me show you this. Yeah. This is exactly the beauty. See that? If you look at the front, see that? The thickness is identical.
Yep.
But you do a secondary grind on this side. See that?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that cool?
And that's that.
This side still exists. It does not change. But mm-hmm. I add the secondary side. See this single valve, you look at the angles. Mm-hmm. Isn't that cool? The thickness have not changed. It's now, only I play with the angles right now.
So you said even though, you know, we're talking about the dagger again, just so you guys know, you said that even though it's a compound single bevel and technically it has a bevel on both sides, one remains the dominant one. Is that simply because it is more? It's a more prominent bevel, like the bevel.
It is the main bevel because you remember you're shooting the arrow with a clockwise rotation. Mm-hmm. So I'm using this edge right here mm-hmm. for the cut and tear.
Okay. I got you. And then that's also what allows the meat to push away from the blade.
Correct. And not to mention, see, the backside with the rotation of this part, this backside actually will create bubbles.
I got you.
Isn't that cool?
That's awesome. Now, it's important to understand, too, and I don't remember if we touched on this in the last episode, so I'll just go ahead and say it anyway. When you use the dagger, it is designed to function similar to a regular broadhead, where it's, you know, it's a cut-on
concept. Yeah, I mean, if you shoot it under 315 feet per second, actually, right. Most cases, most people shoot under 300, it is a very good broadhead with a very good sharpness retaining and with a very well-balanced, a slow rotation broadhead. Remember, it is not like the Falcon. It's a slow rotational broadhead because the weight is on the outside. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a lot more better stability as it rotates.
So then would you recommend the dagger to be used more for people who aren't using AeroVane? Since AeroVane rotates
I mean, all the broadhead can be used for anything. The upside and downside is that if you want to use the rest, you can.
Okay.
When you buy the most expensive kitchen knife and the least expensive kitchen knife, what's the major difference? If you sharpen your knife before you do that, they are very much identical. I mean, say you got a set of, say, Sawafuji, or then you got a set of Henkos, and you just chop anything, cut anything with it. I don't care how much you pay for it. It's not going to be the greatest.
Yeah, okay.
And then for me, that's the reason I designed all my broadhead to the point that you can sharpen it very easily.
Okay.
But then when you sharpen any broadhead, the worst thing you can do is that using something like a 220 grit and you go for it. You know what you're going to end up with? Your 125 is going to end up with 109.
You know, guys, in today's day and age, scents, lures, and attractants are a big part of our hunting experience. When it comes to choosing a product, we here at Wing and Tail look no further than Rack Getter Scents. At RackGetter, you'll find unique, innovative, one-of-a-kind products that bring the deer in and keep them coming back for more. They also have products for bear, turkey, fish, and more. Most importantly, being a local small business, Gerard hand-delivers every product to his dealers, so you know he's got his finger on the pulse. So if you're looking to up the odds this fall and you'd like to support a local small business while doing it, head on over to RackGetterSense.net and check out what they have to offer.
Now, when you use the Tomahawk, and what I really like about him and why I want to use it for turkey is because, again, like I said, the dagger is designed to, you know, enter and cut the same way a typical broadhead is. But the dagger, it's still going to go into the turkey or the deer, and it's still going to penetrate, but it's more designed to transfer maximum energy. And
the Tomahawk.
Yeah. The Tomahawk is designed to transfer maximum energy because it has that leading edge. And instead of having a cut force, it's a impact force, essentially.
I'll tell you what it really feel like. Mm-hmm. Imagine you're holding a screwdriver and then got yourself a piece of cloth on a cushion. Push down and rotate. You will see that all of a sudden the material will all curve up. But remember, you're shooting it out of at least 130-pound KE bow. What do you think is going to happen? Your meat is not going to, whatever meat that you're encountering and the skin you're encountering is not going to handle it. But as the meat is being tightened, with like a screwdriver put into the meat and turned, you're going to grab the rest of the meat and tear them and concentrate them. And all of a sudden, you push this entire thing through. Now you know why when you really shoot a Tomahawk, especially the knob. In other words, you make sure this is not sharp. Mm-hmm. If it's sharp, you end up with just like a dagger. If it's not sharp, you end up putting a screwdriver and turning it. Now you're going to end up with a hole about this big because you tear the skin and now you're forcing all this energy dispersion and distribution.
I got you.
We're talking a distribution of about 130 pounds of kinetic energy onto a hole. Yeah, I know.
You end up looking like you shot it with a rifle or something.
Actually, worse than that, because literally, it's like somebody put a power driver through an animal.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That, of course, now we talk about broadhead and so on. The critical part is that I think a lot of people don't understand or have not really understand the material of a broadhead, just like the way they deal with knives, which I think we want to address a little bit.
Yep. So the first material, so real quick, because I know we touched on it in the last episode, and we don't have to go in depth because we covered it pretty well before. I just want to reiterate that you do have a third broadhead, which is the swing blade broadhead, which is interchangeable. It's got a bunch of different blades on it. We pretty much covered it in depth in the last episode. So if you want to recap on that, go back.
No, actually, we don't need to because I want to talk what we're going to talk about, because I suggest that we talk about the material. Mm-hmm. Because the swing blade is what you call and call. If you understand what each material does, the answer is only one, swing blade. Mm-hmm. When you know why I use different material on the swing blade compared to, say, a dagger or a tomahawk.
What's but the swing blade made out of?
The main body is made of 775, and the tip is made of MIMMed stainless. The blade is made of a 304 stainless.
And you can interchange all the pieces to get whatever weight you want, right?
And then the screws on a swing blade, that tiny, tiny screw, is made of chromoly.
Made of what now?
Chromoly.
I've never even heard of that.
Chromoly is your impact wrench, your impact sockets. Okay.
I got you.
That's your chromoly.
I'm with it. It can handle the torque.
Exactly. But remember, it's only 0.9 millimeter thick.
Right. Okay. So again, the trade, there's a give and a take with everything that you use.
Yes. Unfortunately, I remember when I was talking to Cameron, I spent one full episode talking about material. And it was so, I got so many email and phone call because I got so many, how do you say it, confused and exciting of hearing that episode. So I think this episode, I want to dabble on it.
All right.
Because a lot of people do not understand when you say steel, when you say titanium, when you say aluminium or magnesium, what are you, is the person really talking about?
Most of the time, it's like
people say about, I got chicken, I got beef.
Is it grass-fed? Is it organic? Is it pen-raised? Is it farm-raised?
Yeah. Are you talking T-bone steak, Salsa-burr steak?
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking ground beef? Or are you talking filet mignon? Right. I mean, see, that was, are they all genetically identical? It's beef. But just then, or on simply how you handle that beef is so different. Or not every single cow is a beef master or Argentinian.
Right.
They all are different looking cow. Cow is not a cow.
Not every cow is going to give you Wagyu.
Yes, exactly. And even if you got that, depends on how you massage it and how you fed it. It's not going to have all the fat, the marbling that my wife so much like.
Exactly. Or like wicked tuna. Look at the color.
Hey, my good buddy Greg Krakowski is on those.
That's awesome. My brother used to love watching that show. That's great. Yep. So three main, and I say main in air quotes, the three main materials used to make broadheads today are steel, aluminum, and titanium. Right? Am I missing anything?
Those are the three main material most people use.
Okay.
But then I just want to talk about one simple thing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people say aluminum is no good. In some cases, aluminum is indeed not as ideal for this material. As a matter of fact, I remember quite a few companies because of the machining ability. Remember, when we do CNC when people do CNC machining back in the 1990s, doing 6061 is considered pretty damn high tech. But 6061 is not just 6061. You got T1, T2, all the way to T6. T means tempered. T6 is significantly harder over the T1, which is significantly softer. But then, that's what so-called aerospace aluminium. But then you go into the 7000 series, your 7071, and so on. But just for basic, the moment you move from 6061, because I'm going to want to talk about T6, over to 7071 T5, okay? 770 T5. Just that alone, the difference is 300% in hardness. Yes, it's that much.
And like we said before, hardness can be great, but also not so great.
You're right. But see, aluminium that a lot of people like the 7071 T, that itself is 82% strength of stainless on a 303 compared to something like a 20-25% because of hardening. So you're talking about three times the hardness to start with. But aluminium is less than a third to a quarter of the weight of steel. Now, then, I mean, can we go harder? Sure we can. We can go to 8400 series of aluminium. I mean, I know that G5 used that for the risers before. This is really good and hard to work stuff. The downside is that the corrosion resistance is not that high. Then you move to the next level. It's called dura aluminium. Now you're talking those aluminium with the same identical density, but close to case 5 hardening of steel. They're very hard to work with.
Okay.
But they are super lightweight.
Right. So how hard is too hard? In your opinion,
this is a way to reach your problem. You see, most of my broadhead in the old days, when I first make my dagger into MIMS, I have them hardened to 63 HRC. No good.
Brittle?
Yes, it's extremely brittle. It's hot, it's like crazy. The sharpness retaining is fantastic. But the moment you encounter anything superbly hot, you crack, it will shatter. But then I go into a little bit deeper and say, oh, I can't be the only one facing this problem. So I learned from the drill bit industry. It's called a sectional hardening.
Is it what it sounds like?
Yes, you harden the section you need to and don't harden the section you don't.
Right. So the blade edge would be harder than the rest of the broadhead.
Correct. I mean, in some way that if you look at the, as we're talking about blade, you look at a Japanese blade, you notice that the katana, the center core is soft. Only the very front edges of that katana is hard.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's cool.
Actually, in most cases, you on the outer blade, you do folding. What you are really doing is that you're going to align the material. Because remember, 2 to the power is a very big number. Most people just don't understand. If you fold a blade 50 times, what is the thickness? I mean, say the blade is, say, a millimeter. When you fold the blade 50 times, what is the what is the minimum thickness you have with it?
Too big for me to do in my head.
Yeah, 2 to the power 50. That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah. That's like that. That old thing that you know math teachers love to ask kids. What would you prefer? $10 million right now or 2 pennies doubled every day for 30 days?
Yeah, 2 pennies higher.
Yeah, and that's only 30 days. Never mind 50. You know, yes. So it's more than 10 million. Let's just put it that way.
Right, and then on top of that, see, because then you do that, the blade is superbly the blade molecules align to the same direction. Mm-hmm. Okay, but at the same time, it's superbly brittle. That means if you use that knife alone and you hit anything, even hit bone, then it would just snap right off.
Right.
That's the reason they put a core steel in. They was now, before they fold the final, they will now layer the steel in the middle and they fold it.
All right.
So the edges of that blade is all the way good. Then they went through a hardening. It's called a mud hardening. So they put the mud on to where the blade is, on the back of the blade. So that part, you're not going to harden. Only the blade edge got hardened. Now you see why that wave right there.
And it's also hardened where it needs to be, and it's soft where it doesn't need to be.
It's soft where it needs to be, and so on. Right. But then now the problem with a broadhead is the same problem that most people with a drill bit. Because if you harden the entire drill bit, the moment you hit anything, the bill would just snap right off in the middle.
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times.
Right. So if you find a really good broadhead, you find out the back where the chuck holes, that material actually is soft. You can use a file and file and shape and cram on it. You will eat in it because that's why you want the back of the drill bit to be soft so that your chuck can hold it.
See, and that's so funny because that's so opposite of what we would think for face value. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like because I did not know better. And I'm sharing my experience with people who are listening. So mm-hmm. I first thing, I think, oh, I hardened the whole thing. Super hot, 63 HRC. Nope. I end up throwing the whole batch.
Well, it's the same. It's the same, it's the same concept with the aero vane. When you made your original aero vane, it's got to be smooth. We don't want air drag, and we created more air drag.
Yes. I mean, the what happened is that during that process, I make all my 100, 120, I make it all 63 chassis. It's super hard. I mean, it take me, even my diamond sharpeners, it take me forever to get the edge the way that it can be moved because it's that hard.
Right.
Then the sharpeners retaining is fantastic. But then I was testing it. Anytime a shooting do anything semi-harder, snap the blade right off. Yeah. I mean, we are talking about cracking right here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weak point, you know.
Because under O-ring is...
Right. Now, if I know this is a loaded question because it depends on how the broadheads are made, the factory, you know, the environment, all that stuff. But if someone wanted to know what is the happy medium between edge retention and durability, what hardness level when we're
about 53. That's the answer I found. You see, the harder you got, the more polished, the more shiny and whatever, just so we know, it is not better. Mm-hmm. You want the rough on the side of the blade to be able to be rougher, not perfectly smooth. You want a tiny bit rougher. So you have your boundary layer is much easier. Your cut. Remember, you're not cutting it the same speed as you're cutting meat with your hand with a knife. Mm-hmm. You're cutting it at over 200 something miles per hour when you cut it.
I mean, it's fast. Snap of a finger, it's already in the ground.
I mean, one of the best examples I tell people, well, yeah, speed and power. If you really go to and look at the claw, I mean, Bass Pro Shop usually have a grizzly bear, whatever there. Go there and touch that claw. What part of it is sharp? It's not really that sharp. In the front of it, it's actually not even got edge on it. Mm-hmm. But then if you put 500 pounds of force behind it at, say, something like 120 miles per hour, I'll guarantee it'll cut you in pieces that you don't believe. You shrink.
Like nothing.
So, I mean, I remember I talked to Brett Frutoway out of Aerodynamics Solution. He said, when you have cuts, the speed and power is two of the two major forms. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was out watching a movie, a piece of wire of this thick, if you put 50,000 tons on it and then go by, you'll cut every one of them in half without even knowing.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Let me give you an example so you know. Do you know how all McDonald's, Burger King hamburgers are cut?
Old McDonald's had a farm?
No, yeah. You know how McDonald's hamburgers, how do you cut the bread? The very old days, you got that serrated metal blade and cutting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you're sharpening the blade. You know how those bread are being cut right now? They're cut with a Dyneema fishing line.
Really?
Yes, all the bread are cut with Dyneema fishing line. So now they put a fishing line on this reel and they tighten it.
Mm-hmm.
Really tight, and then run it. The moment the bread touches, slide in half.
That's incredible.
And I saw that in action once in front of my face. I'm cutting myself with it.
But you cut yourself with it?
Yes. I got a cobia on the line on my Ambassador 6600. It's about 35-pound cobia. I grabbed my fishing rod like this. The fishing line just like the rod bends, and the fishing line takes shave this whole meat right off you. I'm holding it without nothing. And you know, just like this whole thing just fall off.
I've had nothing that bad before, but when I fish, I like to use bait casters. And when I'm fishing, I like to keep my finger on top of the line so I can feel the hit. But every now and then I forget to move my finger before I set the hook. And I set the hook and that line just goes straight into the crease of my finger. You know what I mean? So it's just...
No. You don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm holding the front of my bait casting reel. The fishing mm-hmm. is peeling.
Yeah.
That fishing line is actually... Because Ambassador got a level line. It just mm-hmm. could... It shaved this entire finger with the meat right off.
Pulled it right off.
It shaved it right off, just like somebody do an invisible cut.
Good thing I
got was back. Looking at it. That, zip! I'm looking at it, my meat was on the floor.
But did you catch the fish?
I did. That's reason I know it's a 43-pound cobia.
Then it's all worth it, right?
No, that's the reason now if I build another bait casting rod, I don't use lower guy. I put that guy, I put at least an NSG 20 guy and closer to me so that when the rod bends, my hand, if I put my hand in front of it, it mm-hmm. will not be on my finger.
It doesn't go over your finger. You know, clearance. You make that mistake once. You don't make it a second time. That's it.
Yes, there was an original Abu Carbolite 43S. I bought that rod when I was 17 years old. It broke. It's gone now.
That's right. You can make your own now. No big deal.
No, of course. I make much better stuff now.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, that was a proof. I mean, I was like, that was the on-hand experience of how serious a Dyneema line is under pressure and flying out.
On hand, pun intended.
Whether you're a competition archer stepping to the line in the finals or a hunter drawing back on your personal best, you owe it to yourself and the animal to have the best functioning equipment out there. That's why when it comes to bow or arrow components, the Wing and Tail boys pick Fire Knock products every time. Every product they make is proven to outperform anything already on the market by 50% or more, and they have the science to back it up. They've even made it so easy to find the components specific to your arrow shaft with their FireKnock Arrow Component Selector. If you're ready to up your equipment's performance today, check out FireKnock.com.
Is there a better way to make broadheads? Answer to this, yes. At one point, I was ready to make sectional hardening with daggers. I think that would be the best approach. In other words, using the same approach towards the way they do drill bits to harden the edges of the broadhead on the very front and then maintain all the rest soft. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, if you want to make it off 303, you can, but then you're dealing with the vacuum hardening, which is a totally different process again. I think a lot of people like knives. They like to do cryogenic hardening, which is not a bad concept, because you're never going to expose it to extreme heat. So after cryogenic hardening, it's decent. I still like the deep hardening. It's pretty decent. But the sectional heat treat hardening, I think, is the way to go. And that's the one I'm going to really explore after this wave of dagger is finished.
Okay. So then what's the reason? You said at one point you were just about ready to pull the trigger on what did you call it again? The sectional hardening.
Right.
Why have you not? Why did you choose to not?
Because nobody have developed this process. In the case of Brian, it is pretty much only used in drill bits.
Okay.
So now I need to, if I want to go forward, I do develop a machine and kiln to allow me to sectionally harden the tip, the blade of the broadhead without doing more than I should. Mm-hmm. Because remember, drill bit is easy. It's a tube.
Yeah.
A broadhead is not a tube. You can't just go pass it and then do whatever. You need the entire process to hold it, dip it, coat it. the whole control is going to be different.
So what you're saying is you need a whole nother patent.
No, it's not a patent. It's a process. I mean, right. Yes, you can do process patent, but then mm-hmm. depends on how the shape of the product is. The equipment is going to be different. So it is not that simple. I'm trying to tell people. A lot of people say making broadhead is simple. I mean, most broadhead are really simple because they use 6061 or 7055 ferro. They put a MIMD or high pressure die cast tip on the ferry front. And then they get some blades. See, blades are not blades again. I mean, the German razor blades are one of the better ones, but they can't do what I need to do. I had to develop process. Again, I actually had to find, I'll tell you a funny story. I actually had to find a hinge company. Yes, you hear me right, hinge. The one who make mini hinge. And then I develop material with them to make my swing blade because each of the blade of the swing blade is a hinge.
Yeah. No, I mean that makes sense. And that's how it, you know, it's able to hinge.
Yes, because you go in and roll like this.
Yeah.
And when you roll like this, it's not as simple as roll because when you roll, the blade changes, the tip of the angle of the roll, the front of the angle changes, everything it matters.
Right.
And remember, a hinge is not a hinge. The hinge do not just go like that. Some of the hinge go like this way, in the center and then out. See, every single hinge is different again. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people just have no idea how complicated to make a mechanical piece do exactly what you want on paper. Now, you want to make it into real life.
And that's where the fun begins, right?
I know. And then after you finish with, how do you grind it? How do you hold that thing and grind it to the way that you want it with a single bevel? Now, the swing blade is indeed a single bevel.
That's right. It's a true single bevel.
And that is 53 HRC.
So it's just perfect. And I'll be honest with you. So we've talked about this. I was ready to shoot the daggers this year. Mm-hmm. And then we were talking about, you know, indexing and then, you know, marking them and having to do the knock tuning. To be honest with you, I don't have the time to do knock tuning. I just, when I get my arrows, I want to shoot them. I want to make sure that they're accurate. I want to, you know, tune whatever I need to out of it and be done with it. So for me personally, in my time and my process, the swing blades are just make more sense for me. You throw them on. Because
at the end of the day, I will tell you one thing. If you're a good shot, the only concern you have is not how good the broadhead is. It's how accurate the broadhead can be aimed with the arrow you got to the target you want. Because if you cannot make that, all the rest become a non-issue. You're not going to make it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. So we kind of, throughout this episode, like just now we were talking about the steel, the hardness, the, you know, and all that good stuff, the edge retention, the durability. We kind of touched on the aluminum and the titanium a little bit as we were going through the episode.
I wanted to put it in because so people can understand. I mean, just like, you know, in most cases, the only titanium you should use is GL5. All the rest of titanium, don't even bother.
Is it because it's the only one that's structural enough to use for a broadhead?
Yes, that's the one that is actually is in some cases. And as a matter of fact, it's the original material that we use for our hip joint, shoulder joints, or inside this finger. Mm-hmm. I broke this up when I was 12.
Well, you got titanium in there now?
So that time, I my dad was super surprised to find out how expensive that piece of titanium that they hammer into this finger and stick it so that it will bend.
Oh, so you can't bend it? You can't bend it at this joint anymore?
See that?
Right.
You got a piece of titanium holding it.
At least you're not a lefty.
Yeah. But see, I was building a model airplane, and then when I go through the process, that's what happened.
Well, listen, like they say, if you're not getting hurt as a kid, you're not having fun, right?
Oh, you bet. I hurt mine. That'll be enough. I mean, I got 7 broken ribs, cracked skull 3 times. I even broke my leg bone. The main leg bone on my right. Yeah, I stand up shoulder on both sides. I broke this tendon.
Goodness.
Oh, I got enough.
Yeah.
I'm paying for it. I'm in my 60s now.
So if there's nothing else, is there anything else that you want to bring up about aluminum?
I just want people to understand in titanium, in some cases, now, if you bought aluminum, like 6061, the downside of it. I mean, a few companies use that exclusively, like your Grim Reaper, your Mussy. They're not bad products. You just need to understand. After you shot an animal with it, bin test it before you reuse it because they are soft. But they are very, because 67 aluminum in some ways is much better because it opened the blades much better of mechanicals. Okay. But if you use it for, say, fixed blade, the gap is going to be off because of accuracy and the tolerances. It cannot be held. The 6061 is softer.
Now,
I remember when I shot the Final Deer. Remember the big deer on the Final Catalog and also on all the Final Package? I shot that with a Mussy 3 blade.
Nice.
But it is not a screw-on. It's a glue-on.
Glue-on. That's right. You did mention that.
Yes, because the screw-on with that connection, the arrow is never straight. And Terry out of Archery Custom teach me. Say, Dodge, you really want to shoot something and you don't want to dual-tune every single broadhead? Forget the screw-on because none of them make right. The insert is not make right. The broad is not make right. You never get them fly right. get a glue on because I'm using the Beamans. Mm-hmm. So I use musty glue on.
Right.
And instantly, the flies perfectly.
That's good to know.
For me.
And that time. Was and just a simple yes or no for the time being will be fine because I don't want to go into it right now. But is that where your inspiration for the Stalker series came for the it's not the Stalker.
It's a Stalker. Yes.
Is that where your inspiration for Stalker came from?
No, it's not. The Stalker actually that was actually behaved like an outsert. So okay. The outsert is built into the broadhead. That's what it is.
I got you. So then one last thing, and I think I got nothing else for the day. If there's anything else you want to touch on.
No, I think we've covered everything. That's the reason I say with titanium, you want basically your GL5. That's uh-huh. The only titanium that worked. If anybody give you anything, it doesn't work. I don't think anybody is making anything besides GL5, grade 5.
Okay.
On stainless steel, blue steel will always be hard, sharper, but there's no way to, you really have to wrap it in oil, mm-hmm. even when you're hunting. You know, to keep the sharpness because you instantly rust on the edge. I mean, when I was learning how to cut when I was a kid, every single Chinese good cutting knife are blue steel. That means it'll be sharpened every single day. And then throughout the day, you constantly wipe it with peanut oil.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't, the moment the rust kick in, your blade is gone.
You're screwed. Yeah.
Yeah, and the stainless is 303, 304. Although you can use a 20 series stainless steel, the 420. But then you're talking a whole list of nonstop and hardening annealing process. Right. In other words, just find something you like. Just need to know stainless steel is not stainless steel.
Now, last week, one of the big things we were talking about was mechanicals and that the downside of one of the downsides of mechanicals is that you instantaneously lose, say, 15 pounds of kinetic energy just simply because of the force needed to open the blades.
Correct. The opening process is a change of mass in direction.
Right. Is there, would one of these, does the material that the blades are made out of increase or decrease the amount of lost energy needed to open
the blades?
No, it's
a deployment approach. In other words, forward to backward deployment, back deployment, sideways deployment. I mean, so far, the best deployment that I have found, of course, is my spring blade. And the second best deployment I found is what G5 did. And mm-hmm. the third will be more like what the Rage did.
Okay. I got you.
And then after that, it's
the sliding action.
It's a slide and then open.
Okay. I got you.
But see, the G5 is strict slide and then out. The slide out coming like that. The one is like coming out like this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the absolute worst is from front to back.
Front to back. Yeah. No, that one makes a lot of sense.
And not to mention, that is the most inaccurate in aerodynamics. If you put anything in high rotation, that will not fly well.
Okay.
Which is one of my customer called me and asked me how come all their Aero Bolt 3 is not flying well with Aero Wing 2. I asked him to show me the broadhead. Sure enough, you got a too big front paddle in the front.
Yeah.
It do not work.
I think my dad's got a couple of them that he likes to shoot. The three.
Yeah, I know. If you want to shoot that, very easy. Go and put half degree blazer on it. It'll work. Mm-hmm. And just don't shoot over 315.
Yeah. So just to summarize everything we covered today, because we kind of went through a lot. The first half of the episode was specifically going through the three different types of broadheads that Dorge has. We went through the Dagger, the Trauma Hawk, and we recapped on the Swing Blade that we covered last week. But mm-hmm. more importantly, we touched on a lot of the materials today. And basically, if we're going to summarize what we talked about, the steel is heavier than aluminum, and aluminum is heavier than titanium. And titanium, as you go through them, right? Mm-hmm. As you go through these, for example, if you want to use steel, you're going to have a hard material, depending on the hardness of it, and you're going to have a lot of weight for the size of your broadhead.
You simply make the weight smaller. I mean, like a 9/8. You mean weight is based on weight is a size. It's a fraction. It's a result of the shape and design. See, right. At the end of the day, I want to put this out. Knowing all the material is only matter one and only one condition. What is your design objective? Can you design an aluminum broadhead that will behave like a dagger? Answer is yes. But you're going to pay a lot for it. And you don't give you much. Right. But then if you want to make a big shaped broadhead, something like a Rage, you don't have much choice. You have to make the furrow out of aluminum. Otherwise, it would be too heavy. It won't give you that 100 grain. If you want to make a short broadhead, say 100 grain, you could, and then you want the blade, make the blade reasonably small. Otherwise, you're looking at 125, like the tooth of the arrow with four blade. I mean, those are your design limitations. Just because say, oh, this looks so cool. Does it fly the way you want? Does it cut the way you want? And finally, does it kill the way you want? It's the real deal.
So essentially, if you guys want a broadhead that you can shoot into animals, shoot into the ground, keep shooting, keep shooting, keep shooting, the hardest broadheads probably aren't for you. If you're worried about keeping edge instead, you want to keep edge sharpness through your shots, then the hardness is somewhere you want to go. Do you want
to just remember the German blades, like Mazar replacement broadhead with a thin blade. When mm-hmm. you're thin, your grinding is not that difficult. The most difficult blades to sharpen are always the thickest blade.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I've had trouble with them. mm-hmm. All right, so to wrap up the episode, we have a listener comment here by Mr. Chimiento. He commented, he said, "Will you guys please talk about arrows for my setup? I shoot a Matthews Phase 4, 29, 65-pound draw, 29-inch draw length at 80% let-off. He has a complete titanium kit with a titanium string stop, gas strings set to the 0.112 string diameter, and he shoots tack and hunts in New England."
Oh, good. That's easy. Go to 22, ultra light CTI 30L with the AIH-3L-A, and then shoot on a tack. I would even go with a 50 grain point on a hunting 8500 grain point. You're good to go. You're going to have the best combination, happiest person. No need to do 1,000, 3,000 string. Let's go try and do the job. If you want super durability and you don't mind the arrow a tiny bit smaller, get the ArrowWave 300. You'll love it. But for the speed and expression tech, or even with that setup, ASA, Hunter Class, IBO, you're good. I mean, yes, great. I'm gonna help GoTo sell a lot, GoTo 22, but that's a fantastic arrow. And is it as durable as the ArrowWave 300? No, but the weight is there. It's called ultralight. Mm-hmm. And if you want a bit more durability, the ArrowWave is about 50 grain heavier.
And I will say, and I've said this before in the past, I have beat the shit out of ArrowWaves in the past. And every single one that I found is still usable. So... Mm-hmm. I can attest to that. I've also used Gold Tip. They have phenomenal arrows. I've used Easton before. They have phenomenal arrows. We've talked about all of them here on the show. So, Mr. Chumiento, I want to thank you for writing into us. I hope we gave you the answer that you were looking for. If you have any other questions, write on in. I'd be more than happy to help you out. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in hearing what kind of arrow we recommend for you, be sure to leave us a comment either on YouTube, send me an email, leave a comment down on Apple Podcasts, down at the bottom of this episode. Leave your review, leave your questions, we'll be able to get to you. George, if you don't have anything else to add for the day, I think this is where we're going to wrap it up. All right. So we want to thank you guys again for joining us here for another episode of the Arrow Series, another episode of Wing and Tail, the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, where success is always a commitment away. And until next week, have a great day.
Have a great day.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.